My name is Amanda Melkovitz. I'm a reporter at the Providence Journal, and I'm speaking here today with Dave Silipini.
Yes, I am Dave Silipini, 57 years old, living in Warwick, Rhode Island.
Where are you from, Dave?
I was born on Vesey Street in Providence, Rhode Island.
Yeah, and what was it like growing up there?
It was kind of a tough neighborhood, old-fashioned Italian neighborhood. Peer pressure had a lot to do with the way you grew up. Mm-hmm. You know, we played a lot of sports. We were very poor. We didn't have nothing, you know. And then my mother passed away when I was 7. And then my father put me in St. Aloysius Home for a reason which I never asked him.
And what year was that you ended up in?
1969.
What was your experience there?
It wasn't a good one.
What happened?
Well, I was sexually molested by a priest there, and I was beaten. That they used beatings as a form of discipline there, especially by Sister Mariata Francis, the Mother Superior. Mm-hmm. She was the only sister that I remembered there because she's had such a negative impact on me with her physical discipline.
What happened with the priest?
Well,
what do you remember?
I remember the most is the pain, you know, the pain. And it was downstairs. We used to roller skate downstairs. You know, they'd had roller skates for us, and we'd roller skate downstairs. And that's he actually molested me twice. Once was downstairs where we roller skated. The second time was upstairs behind the chapel in the room, behind the chapel. When you first walk in the door, there was a chapel straight ahead, I can remember. And there was a room off in the back of the chapel, and that's where he fondled me and molested me for the second time.
How did you end up alone with him?
I really couldn't tell you. It was 50 years ago. I really couldn't. I can't tell you the definitive answers. You know, I can just tell you the pain that I felt. You know, there was some good times there. They used to take us to Spring Lake. They built an ice skating arena. The Laborers Union did that in 1971. That I remember. And we all got ice skates for Christmas. And as I look back now, I think them 2 years are so traumatizing that they had a negative impact on the rest of my life. They actually dictated my demise, my despair, my anguish. Anguish is what I'm living with now, most of all.
Did you tell anybody at the time that you were molested?
No, are you kidding? How could I go back to my neighborhood and tell my friends I was sexually molested? They would give me a beating on top of the one I already got.
And what about your dad, if you told your dad?
I never talked to my father. I never had a good conversation with my father. He was always yelling at me. Mm-hmm. For something, but he didn't. Maybe he did realize, and he didn't want to accept the fact that he was the reason why, you know, I went there. It was because he couldn't take care of me. My brother had gone to my grandmother's, and my father brought me to St. Aloysius every Sunday night. Because he would pick me up sometimes on a weekend, Saturday, and have to bring me back Sunday night. Excuse me. And then Sunday night, I knew that ride where I was going, and I hated it. I hated that ride. So he would try to take alternative routes, but I knew where we would always end up, be St. Aloysius. I used to try some pacifiers before taking me back there, like take me to Magic Chef Restaurant, which is now Anthony's Jewelers on Mineral Spring Avenue. My father was good friends with Anthony Manzo, and he would take me to Dairy Dip on Douglas Avenue. It used to be an ice cream place. It's now Adele's Lemonade. Mm-hmm. And the neighborhood changed so much, and I still go there because that's the only place I knew where I had family. I still go by the house where I was born. Mm-hmm. But my life has been nothing but a mess.
What were you like when you got out of St. Aloysius? You were about 9 years old?
Yeah, sports was a big thing for me. That's why I remembered that gentleman's name who taught fourth grade at St. Aloysius. It was actually St. Peter's School right next door to St. Aloysius where I was in the fourth grade. And Gus Allen had taught me sports, and that's where I learned baseball and football, and that's all I did as a kid growing up, because when I was on that field, I wasn't feeling the pain or the traumatization from the sexual abuse, which I now realize the damage that it did to me. I didn't know it back then. I mean, who's going to talk about that? You know, go back to Charles Street, Vesey Street, and talk about that? Forget it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
Right. So you were about 9 years old when your father came and got you, and did he ever tell you why he put you in the home?
No, and I never asked him either. Mm-hmm. It was so painful there. I even wanted to suppress why I wanted to forget it totally, but I couldn't because it kept resurfacing in emotional problems, mental problems I've had my whole life.
So you think that changed you?
Oh, it destroyed me. It changed me. That change is an understatement. They destroyed my life. I could never keep a job. I could never keep a relationship. I never went to the prom. I never graduated high school. I never got married. I never had kids. I never had any of the joys in life that people have. I can't remember the last time I decorated for a holiday. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the last time where I really had a good relationship with a woman, where she trusted me and I trusted her. I could never trust anybody. You know, I could never trust anybody.
You spent a lot of time in prison.
Oh, yeah. Almost 18 years in and out, in and out, in and out.
Why?
Because I hated myself. Mm-hmm. That's what happens when you sexually molest a child. You take his dignity away. You know, they took my manhood even before I was a child. I didn't have a chance to become anything because my dignity was already gone. I was already suppressing something that was destroying me. At 9 years old, you're suppressing. It's going to resurface in negative emotions somewhere down the line. And it will in every aspect of your life. It's going to keep resurfacing. And that's why I take psych meds today, because I have bipolar disorder and I have massive depression. And self-loathing is what all people who have been sexually molested have, is self-loathing. It's worse than massive depression. It's that you hate yourself. You don't feel good about yourself. You don't think you belong anywhere. You don't want to approach anyone or make any friends because they're going to leave me anyway. So why even bother?
How often did you find yourself thinking about it? Or did you think about it? Did you try to push it away?
I wanted to forget it so bad. Once you suppress something like that, that's so devastating, you don't think about it. You know, you really don't think about it.
So it came out in other ways.
It'll resurface in negative emotions. You either talk about it. You need, if you're sexually molested, you need immediately to get therapy. Immediately. Mm-hmm. Because if not, it's going to continue to surface in negative emotions. That's 100% guaranteed. Mm-hmm. It will resurface, and it's not going to be positive emotions. When I get sexually molested, it's not going to resurface as happiness. It's going to resurface in as self-loathing, massive depression. It'll grab onto something. It'll manifest and make itself worse till you feel like you just want to die. It's the only way to get away from it. And I attempted that in 2007.
What happened?
I attempted suicide.
Tell me about that.
Well, I was in a house where I was using cocaine, and when I came out, I was finished, and I just didn't want to live anymore. I've had it. Once you've had enough pain, you'll either change or die. Mm-hmm. And I tried to die, but two people come and cut me down.
You were hanging yourself.
I was hanging, and they come in. 2 seconds later, they came in like God sent them. Mm-hmm. They cut me down. I never seen them before, and I never seen them again.
Wow.
They were just there for that exact moment to save my life.
You know, what I've noticed about you over time is that your faith is really strong. You talk about God. You talk about Jesus.
I love God. I love Jesus. You know, they brought me out of the muck. They put my feet on solid ground.
And yet you say that you were molested by a priest.
Yes.
That didn't change your faith.
No, because God and Jesus, they didn't do this to me. Mm-hmm. Mankind did this to me. Because when you make a man take a vow of celibacy, you're taking away his natural ability to procreate. He still has to channel those feelings, those emotions, those desires, those needs. It's actually a life of hypocrisy, because you're reading out of the Bible, and the Bible preaches love. All of God's people in the Bible, they all have huge families. And they're going to say, no, you can't marry. Mm-hmm. It's in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
You're reading out of the Bible. Mm-hmm. You're preaching love, but you're not practicing love. And so I think it's a life of hypocrisy, you know?
So you first started talking about this finally a couple of years ago.
I think it was about 4 years ago. Yeah. I started talking to Kristen, because I just felt like...
Who's Kristen?
Kristen was one of my first psychologists at Thundermiss Health Center.
Okay.
And I started talking to her about it. But then I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready. So we just started talking about daily things.
Why did you start talking about it at all? What made you do it?
I couldn't tell you. Just when it's ready to come out, it'll come out.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you told your friend, Eddie? You told Joe? I told another friend from the neighborhood?
Yeah, he didn't even know that. I told him so long ago, he didn't even know that. Yeah. I mean, I didn't tell him so long ago. So when I recently told him, he couldn't believe it. Then once you tell somebody that, then they know. That's the reason why I had so many problems in my life.
And now you're talking publicly to the Providence Journal. Why?
Because I need to get it out. I need to get it out. This is going to be the positive action to contradict the negative way I feel about myself. When you feel bad, when you hate yourself, unless you take positive actions to contradict that, there's only one way out. You're going to die. I'm going to die again.
You see something positive and be in public about.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. I do. Yes, of course I do. Because now everyone knows. So once everyone knows, the shame and embarrassment is gone.
Doesn't matter.
And once that shame is gone, maybe the self-loathing will go too. Mm-hmm. Maybe I won't want to kill myself. Like, I think about it almost every day, sitting home doing nothing, nobody calling me except for Wally and Joey maybe. Other than that, nobody calls. You know, David called last night, but nobody calls on a regular basis. I don't go to nobody's house. I don't have a Christmas tree. I'm lucky I got enough room to get out of bed.
Yeah, describe it. You mean you're living in Oakland Beach?
My room is less than 20 square feet. You know, I'm on mental disability. I do a few windows to get by. I have the cable bill, the auto insurance, and my phone. And them things are all expensive. And living down Oakland Beach, every time I leave the house, it's $10 in gas. Every single time. I'm wearing my brakes up. Oh, just going up and down Warwick Avenue. So I'm looking to move out of there, but where I move, I can't afford a security deposit, but I might have a place October 1st.
Do you think things would have been different if you weren't molested as a child? Do you think your life would
It's a
have been?
Possibility, yeah, because I wouldn't have had that private self-loathing and that private shame. If you keep shame inside and don't do anything about it, it's going to destroy you.
Talk to me about why you feel shame when you were just a child. You didn't ask for this.
I didn't ask for it. No, I didn't, but telling yourself that you didn't ask for something without a positive action to contradict the negative feelings, nothing's going to happen. Nothing changes if nothing changes. You have to change things positively in order to fight the negativity. Because if you don't, now once this story goes out, everyone is going to know. And I am so glad now. I am so glad because now I don't have to live with it or hide from it anymore.
Did you... When things first started coming out about the church in 2002, about the priests who were being moved around, what did you think of those stories? Yeah. Were you following them?
Yeah. What about me? That's what I'm saying. What about me? You get actors on television. Oh, he touched my bottom. Then they'll go pose for Sports Illustrated 2 weeks later. How traumatized are you if you're saying, you're crying and saying the gym teacher touched you. He touched you. And 2 weeks later, you're posing for Sports Illustrated nude.
Yeah, but what about, I'm talking about the Catholic priests, when
I was thinking, what about me?
You were thinking, what about me?
Mm-hmm. What about me? That's all I kept saying to myself. Well, what about me? What about me?
Well, what do you want from the church? Do you want something?
Hell yeah. They took my whole life from me. I've lived alone for 50 years. I might have had girlfriends here and there, but I was never able to keep a relationship. And to this day, I'm all alone. You know, living in less than 20 square feet. Living from room to room to room to room, never having any life, never having anybody, never having nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing. Never been a property owner, never had a new car, never had anything.
Yeah, so you've been in and out of prison for most of your adult life.
Yes.
You use drugs, alcohol.
Yeah. Well, I didn't grow up till I was about 44 years old.
What do you
43
mean?
43 years old. Well, when you're molested by a priest, they take away your emotional and mental maturity ceases to exist because I went from being a curious 7-year-old boy looking to have fun all the time to being traumatized and living in fear all the time. Being 7 years old and having to live in fear is very traumatizing, and it's going to last a long time because I didn't want to stay there. I was in this strange place. Take a 7-year-old boy, hypothetically speaking, if you have a niece or a nephew that's 7 years old, rip him out of the house or her, rip her out of the house, put her in a Catholic orphanage, and we're going to see what she's going to be like when she comes out. Oh, boy, she's going to be mad. I was mad. I had so much anger. I still got a lot of anger, boy, and it's hard to control. I just recently had to go to Butler Hospital because I was losing my mind.
You're in and out of a lot of the rehab or the mental.
Oh, I was in and out of. I've been in and out of almost every program in the state. Got thrown out of everyone, but I graduated the last one, long-term Providence Center. That helped me a lot. But really, what helped me the most is a program I was in prison. I was in there for a little over 3 years straight, practicing nothing but cognitive restructuring. Taking them, because until you're aware of what you have to change, how are you going to change if you don't know what it is? So they taught me how to recognize that negative thought and turn it into a positive one. And with practice, I got not to be good at it, but I'm maintaining. I've maintained the life on the outside for 12, 13, 14 years now after being in prison.
Yeah.
I got 41 arrests and 16 convictions. And in 16 years, I have no arrests and no convictions. It's because I take I believe in God, number one. That's the most important thing. Number two, I take my psych meds. And number three, I'm really going to my therapy. I just went twice in 1 week. I have a psychiatrist and a psychologist.
Is every day difficult for you?
Oh, hell yeah. The loneliness. You get so lonely sitting in that room. I just want to say, you know, I'm tired of it again. It comes close. If it wasn't my medication, my therapy, I'd probably be dead already by my own hand.
Hmm.
I don't want to live a life of loneliness. You know, I can explain the physiological and psychological effects from the priest's side, and I can explain the physiological and psychological effects from my side, being the victim, and the damage that it does. 50 years of post-sexual abuse experience. 50 years. Psychologist, psychiatrist, go to school for what, 4, 8 years? I went to school for 50.
Yeah.
So that's the pain I live with.
Wow.
Knowing that I'm living alone and I'm going to die alone. And it's not fun.
You don't think it's going to change now that you're public about what you've been through?
I'm hoping it's going to change from my inside out, because that's where the healing is going to start, from my inside out. Unless I do something about this, nothing is going to change. Mm-hmm. I just can't sit and try to discern it in my mind. Okay, this is going to happen. That's going to happen. No, it doesn't work that way. You need to commit positive actions to contradict the negative way you feel about yourself. And this is the biggest thing I could do. The most, if you grew up in my neighborhood, this would be the most embarrassing, shameful thing you could ever say. I would be exiled from my neighborhood if it was still the same right now. But I don't care. Because all I care about right now is healing from the inside out. So maybe there's a point where I might be able to approach someone and have another relationship and not be alone anymore.
Mm-hmm. This is a really brave thing for you to do. Yeah.
I do that every time I get done talking.
I want to play for you, if it's okay, Bishop Tobin's homily. So this is the homily from Bishop Tobin at the Cathedrals of St. Peter's and Paul. For the day of prayer and penance.
Incidents of sexual abuse committed against children and youth in our diocese, across the country, and around the world. We also come to seek the forgiveness, the healing of all those who have been wounded by these terrible deeds. What we do here today is part of our faith tradition. We as a community, as individuals, recognize that we have sinned against God and harmed our neighbors. We humble ourselves before the Lord, and we fast, and we pray. We hear the words of the prophet Joel that we use on Ash Wednesday, the beginning of our penitential season. Blow the trumpet in Zion, proclaim a fast. Call an assembly, gather the people, notify the congregation. Let the priest and the minister of the Lord weep and say, spare, O Lord, your people. And in the great penitential Psalm 51, we pray, have mercy on me, O God, in your goodness. And in the greatness of your compassion, wipe out my offense. For I acknowledge my offense, and my sin is before me always.
That's just the beginning part of his homily. I was wondering what you thought of that.
He said just about what I said about the healing, you know, and asking God for forgiveness. I ask God every day for forgiveness, but I don't know how easy it's going to be for me to forgive them. Maybe somewhere down the line I might be able to. This is the beginning of the healing for me first. You know, for me first. I've never been a selfish person, you know, never, because I believe in God and I love Jesus. And what he said at the end, I love the prayers to God. I love going into God's house, but I can't because what I see I don't like. You know, when you pass the basket 5 times, you know, I don't agree with that, you know, but that's a whole nother story. But he said exactly just about what I'm saying, how hard it is to heal. You know, it is not easy to heal from sexual abuse, and the reason why it's taken me so long to heal because it's taken me so long to talk about it, and the mistake I made was stuffing it and not talking about it. But who knew? I was 8, 9 years old. Who knew? I was so scared. A little boy, picture a 7 or 8 year old boy, like someone in your family, and picture them going to a Catholic orphanage like St. Vincent's or St. Mary's. They might be different now. They might be a heck of a lot different now than they were back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. On the news last week, the bishop said that was the church of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. So he is admitting that that's what happened then. I'm glad he said that because I was there from 69 to 71. And Sister Mary Arthur Francis was not a nice woman. She beat first and asked questions later, whether the pointer, the ruler, or her hand. You got it. Believe me, and I got plenty of it. They're probably going to say, oh, he was a bad boy. Oh, yeah, 7-year-old kid, yeah. How bad could I have been? Please. You know, when I go to the doctor's office, and I go a lot, I watch little children with their parents, and I watch the little children just running around playing. I'm looking at their face, and I can see the curiosity in their face. You know, and then when you sexually molest a child, that curiosity is gone. Now it's nothing but fear. The emotional and the mental the growth ceases to exist. That's why I've had so many emotional and mental problems in my life. They took my dignity at 7 years old. Mm. They took everything I was and everything I was ever going to be for their perverted pleasure.
What do you want to see from Bishop Tobin?
I'd like to see him publicly apologize to me and compensate me for the 50 years that I lost of my life. 50 years. 50 years of no holidays, no marriage, no children, no life's enjoyments whatsoever. Might have been a few here and there, but they were meager. They were nothing. Until I get rid of this, I can never have any true joy. I've never had joy or happiness in my life. My life has been an absolute mess for 50 years. You ask anyone who knows me, or you look up my record, you'll see. And all of a sudden, it just stops. How was that? Does God help me? I prayed to him all them years. Please help me. Between that, the cognitive restructuring program I took in prison, the medication, and my therapy. Look how much work I have to do just to be a normal person. That is not fair.
Now, the General Assembly, you know, briefly took up the statute of limitations, looking at that, and may take it up again. What role are you going to play with that?
Whatever my attorney asked me to, you know, if they don't listen to me, I might get so mad I might flip the table over. I don't know, you know, because when I start talking about this now, I'm calm now. Mm-hmm. You know, I took my meds this morning. I take them every day, and I'm calm.
What do you want legislators to know about this?
the effect that it has on the victim's life. Maybe none of them senators have any family that's ever been sexually molested. I'm not sure. But if they did, they should listen to them. You know, and when I go, I'm going to tell them my story. You know, and my story is the truth. Mm-hmm. You know?
Dave, you were great.
Thank you.
I'm glad you came in today to talk to us. I know it takes a lot for you.
It's part of my healing process. I don't care what anybody says or thinks anymore. That's what, am I pissed off? Am I mad about it? Am I mad about what they did to me? Oof.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like you see that movie Forrest Gump, right? With Forrest Gump's girlfriend's Jenny's house, he had it bulldozed. That's what I'd like to do to St. Aloysius. Bulldoze it. Mm. I'm not going to do it, but I'd really like to. I'm telling you. Every last brick.
You just look at that rage.
Oof. Good thing for this medication or therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I got nothing to live for no more. This is the only thing I have to live for.
This meaning telling your story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Making them pay for my pain.
You know, you're probably talking, when somebody hears this and someone sees a story, it may be somebody who's been through what you've been through and has never talked about it.
I'm sure they haven't. I hope this brings people out. If, you know, if you were with me at St. Aloysius and you read this story and you remember me, just come forward. I'm all right.
Dave, thank you.
All right, thanks.